You're listening to a highlight from the Yishai Fleisher Show on Voice of Israel.
Shalom, everybody, and welcome to the Yishai Fleisher Show here on Voice of Israel, broadcasting live from Jerusalem to the world, and you're a part of it from wherever you are. This half hour, discussion about Jewish sexuality. That's right, it could be seen as taboo, it could be seen as something embarrassing or something shameful, but it is not. It is very much part and parcel of the holiness of the Jewish people and the perpetuation of the Jewish people and this this nation that has been around for some 3,500 years has some wisdom when it comes to Jewish sexuality and also has things and people that need help. And people like Rabbi Gedalia Peter Seil are marital counselors, but also sexual counselors, or maybe preferably intimacy counselor. Rabbi Gedalia joins us today in studio. Rabbi, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
So this is a topic that is easily made embarrassing or shameful or something that we really shouldn't talk about out loud. So first thing, I really want to thank you for coming into studio today. And maybe we'll ask the first question, which is, how does a person like yourself, a rabbi who was also involved for a long time with overseas students and other things, how would you get involved in something like Jewish sexuality on a professional level?
Well, that's an excellent question. It basically started 17 years ago. I was in Phoenix, Arizona, and I was studying with somebody whose girlfriend knocked on the door late at night, 10 o'clock at night. She said she needed to speak to me. I was a young rabbi. I was 23, 24 years old. I let her in. My wife was in the kitchen. I brought this woman into the study. This woman happened to be non-Jewish, girlfriend of my Jewish chavrusa. And she started talking to me about her issues with her boyfriend. And I was okay with that until she started going into details of what went on in their bedroom. And at that point, I was married only 2-3 years. I didn't know what to do with myself. I wanted to bury my face in my hands and say, lady, get out of here. Well, why are you telling me these things? It was really uncomfortable. I felt very, very uncomfortable. But at the same time, I realized that this is what she needed. This is what she wanted. She saw me as a figure to come and speak to about these particular things. And so for many, many years, I was always walking around with that concept of, wait, there's a whole area here that's an important part of people's lives that maybe some of them would like to share with rabbinic figures, but just don't know how. And maybe the rabbinic figures are not open to being available on these matters. So when a special course opened up that integrated both the practical and the halachic aspect of sexuality, I jumped at the opportunity and decided to broaden my knowledge.
That is definitely a fascinating field, one which keeps marriages together or sometimes also unglues relationships.
Right.
What kind of people come to you? What kind of individuals kind of get up the gumption or decide that, yeah, they have a problem and that they want to deal with it? How does a person reach out to a rabbi and a sexual counselor?
Well, the type of people who come to seek counseling in any field are people who, on the one hand, have issues, have certain difficulties, but at the same time want to resolve them, which is great. So somebody who's already coming to counseling has taken a tremendous step in trying to solve those issues. When somebody comes to me for counseling, it could be either a couple or it could be a single guy. It could be somebody who was having trouble with masturbation issues, or it could be just a couple who it's there's no magic there. There's nothing going on there between the sheets, and they would like to try to put something together.
Wow, you know, like, today with modernity, with the proliferation of images in the internet that are so accessible to even young children and certainly to adults, you understand why in, for example, the ultra-Orthodox community, there is such a discussion about banning the internet and somehow keeping this devil away from people. How many people like fall into the trap of pornography, masturbation, and things that are really so destructive for the human soul?
There are a lot of people. There's a high percentage, and within the Jewish field, there are very few studies or good, accurate studies that are done, because there are not very many people who volunteer this kind of information, but the numbers are probably significantly higher than we'd like to admit. And this could affect both teens and married couples as well. I was dealing with a couple whose the husband had issues with pornography, and at the same time, his wife at this point was completely unaware of his habit, which may or may not be termed as an addiction, but it was definitely a habit that he was having a hard time controlling. And he wanted help in controlling this habit and getting rid of pornography in his life because he felt it was having an impact on his sexuality with his wife.
Rabbi Gedalia, what is the Jewish concept of sexuality? Where does it exactly fit into marriage? In some religions, it's seen as a bad option, you know, kind of a secondary option as opposed to the purest option, which is staying away from sexuality altogether, celibacy. What is the Jewish vision of it?
Well, I think you put it very nicely in your introduction when you said holiness and perpetuation of the Jewish people. That's definitely an element. But it's interesting to note that within Jewish law, there is actually a commandment for sexuality. It's not just a suggestion. It's just not just something that you can do for perpetuation of the species of the Jewish people. There is actually a commandment which applies even if the woman is pregnant, even if the woman, the wife, can no longer have children. There is still a commandment. It's one of the things that we commit to on the night that we get married to our wives, that we will provide certain aspects in our relationship, one of them being the sexual aspect. But there are guidelines on how to do it and how to do it so that it retains its purity and its holiness.
Is pleasure a part of the story here?
Most definitely. The guideline should be taken from the commandment of Ve'ahavta l'recha kamocha. One should love their fellow being as they love themselves. And there is a, just like we would like to enjoy our aspects of sexuality, we want to make sure that our partner enjoys sexuality as well.
One of the great blocks to pleasure and sexuality is communication. People don't know how to communicate what they want. They don't know how to ask to hear what the other partner wants. There's a real challenge in kind of talking about it again, even as the challenge is to have you on this radio show. There's something there that you want to keep in the bedroom, right? Mm-hmm. It's taboo, as you're saying. So how do you break the communication barrier?
Well, communication is very important between couples in any field. It's true. You see it. A lot of couples who come for marriage counseling need help on communication, and it is no different when it comes to the bedroom as well. I prepare grooms for their marriage, and one of the things that I ask them when we talk about the practical aspect of sexuality is, how do you know what will give your wife pleasure? And every groom has their own answer. They know the internet, their friends, their family, everybody's told them something. And I tell them, look, the correct answer is comprised of three words and three words only. And then they start scratching their heads and think of the three words that I'm referring to. I tell them the three words are, I don't know. You cannot know what gives the other person pleasure unless there is communication. Communication can be in one of two forms. It can either be verbal communication, where you ask what gives you pleasure, or it can be in nonverbal communication through touching, through taking somebody's hands and placing it in different areas of the body. But those are two aspects that are vital, those two forms of communication, in order to make sure that both partners are happy.
Right, I understand that's how you communicate. But my question to you is if you're embarrassed to communicate, how do you get over that barrier? How do you teach people? Do you when they come to counseling to you, do they come as a couple and they say to you, look, and they kind of hemming and hawing? Like, how do you get people to really talk about it? At the same time, you know, Judaism has a vision of something we call tzniut, which is humility and modesty. So there's like a place where you don't talk about it out loud. And in fact, there's all kinds of statements about not asking for it, not talking about it in an overt fashion. And at the same time, you're saying that this communication barrier has to come down so that people can really have fulfilled sexual lives.
Right. That's one of the hardships that we have. Up until the wedding night, we don't talk about it. It is completely taboo. We don't think about it. All of a sudden, that night, both the husband and the wife are expected to appear in front of one another undressed. Now, in order to be able to do that, there is a certain amount, or not just a certain amount, a lot of trust that needs to be between the couple. And I'm dealing now with a couple who came to me for marriage counseling. And while I was doing the counseling with them, it turns out that their issue is trust. And the trust is something that also goes into the bedroom. Now, if I can't trust this individual, then how can I completely stand fully clothed before him? And so the issue, the way to overcome that barrier of not being able to talk about it is, first of all, to develop that sense of trust that we have with one another, that, you know, sometimes we think what you say can and will be held against you in the court of law. And a lot of couples use that. When a couple feels that their spouse will use something that they say against them in a later argument, then they're afraid that they'll use the way their body looks against them in a later argument as well. That trust has to be there.
Wow. Trust and love. And I guess it's interesting that you use the word trust, because in my career as a friend to people who have come to me from time to time asking for advice, the kind of advice that you would ask a friend, usually about how to know if this girl or this guy is the right person for me, I always tell them that the number one most important thing is trust. That that feeling that you can count on that person to be there for you in the thick and the thin, in the worst times and the best times, that you really have your heart is with that, that you know that your heart is safe with that person, that person's heart is safe with you. If you have that, then you can really go on. Next, I say shared values, of course. But I actually think shared values is what gets you to that date in the first place, right? But then to know if you have chemistry, trust.
Right. I think it's great that you brought these two things up, because that really leads us into another area which is really, really important, and that is intimacy. Intimacy is basically comprised of essentially those two concepts that you spoke about. One is trust, and the other is the shared values. When we refer to intimacy, any two people, two men, two women, a man and a woman, can feel intimate. A mother and son, a father and daughter. Intimacy is something that we have in our lives. When do we feel intimate? So you'll find people in the army who say that they feel intimate with their buddies. Obviously, it's not in a sexual form, but it is. There's a certain bond. There's a certain shared values. We're both here in the army. We both have certain values that we both think are really important. And at the same time, I know that if I sit and I speak with you about something, I know it will never leave this room. I trust you, even though that trust is not really spoken about and we don't talk about it, but we both know that in this intimate conversation, anything we say stays between us and only between us. And the intimacy is important in a relationship, and especially important in the bedroom.
There's a lot more to talk about with Rabbi Gedaliah Petersile, who is a marriage counselor and also a sexuality or intimacy counselor as well. And we're talking about Jewish sexuality, not an easy topic to broach, and yet one that's important for so many people. We're going to take a short break and we'll be right back.
Voice of Israel, bringing Israel closer.
The boycott, what do? They pick on an Israeli tomato. But what these idiots don't understand is that 97% of the world's tomato stock comes from Israeli seeds anyway. Stop eating tomatoes. But go much farther. Don't use Google, because Google has its beautiful headquarters in Tel Aviv. Get off of Facebook, because Facebook has bought a whole slew of Israeli companies. Stop using the internet.
Catch the full interview with serial entrepreneur John Medved on Rejuvenation with Eve Harrow on Voice of Israel.
And we're back here on the Yishai Fleischer Show. We're talking about Jewish sexuality. We are with Rabbi Gedaliah Petersile. Rabbi Gedaliah is a marriage counselor, a sexual counselor, or an intimacy counselor. You know, there's a famous Talmudic story about a rabbi who's hanging out under the bed of another rabbi as he's engaging in intimacy with his wife. And there's a verbal interchange kind of between the rabbi underneath the bed. He is surprised when he hears his rabbi, the elder rabbi, engaging in real pleasure, with his wife. And the rabbi underneath the bed says, the rabbi on top of the bed, he sounds as though he's never had a bowl of soup in his life. He's so seemingly so hungry for it. And the rabbi on top says, "Hey, you know, get out of here. This is not right what you're doing being here." And the end idea of that famous Talmudic statement is that it is Torah and I wanted to learn it. I wanted to learn this Torah as well, which is a very beautiful thing, that's what we're really doing here. We're not engaging in something that is dirty, God forbid. Quite the opposite. There are many Jewish sources that talk about the beauty and importance of Jewish sexuality. Most famously, the Jewish women down in Egypt who made sure to entice their husbands to have Jewish sexuality so that the Jewish people can be perpetuated under these Holocaust conditions and in the enslavement in Egypt. They go down as being heroines of Jewish sexuality, and there's so much to talk about there. And that's why we're also broaching this topic on the show. You said to me something before the program, which was kind of not surprising yet still shocking, which is that a lot of times you deal with people who are not even aware or understand the anatomy of the other human being across from them, being man or woman, and therefore that hampers their sexuality as well.
Right, and it's not only the anatomy of the opposite sex. There are many people who don't even really fully understand the way their own anatomy works, whether they be male or female. And there's something to understand when you're performing an act that demands knowledge of anatomy. If you don't have that knowledge, there's going to be something lacking in your ability to complete this process. And it's interesting. All you really need is knowledge. But it's knowledge that you have to look for, and you have to study, and you have to understand.
Like, where are you going to get the knowledge? Are you going to say to your rabbi, hey, rabbi, will you teach me about Jewish sexuality? Will you teach me the anatomy of sex?
So there are rabbis who do show certain pictures when they prepare their grooms for marriage. They will show them illustrations so that they're both modest. They're not pictures of real, actual women, but rather illustrations of the physical anatomy. You can also buy them in certain books, or you can see illustrations on the internet as well. But the important thing is to really understand the way everything is placed and the way things look. And you'd be surprised. People who are married don't always understand or fully appreciate the anatomy of their own organs or their counterparts. And I had somebody who was married, and he came to me for counseling after he got divorced and was about to get remarried. And he wanted some tips, and it was amazing to hear that he had virtually no understanding of the female anatomy after having been married for almost 5 years.
Well, that brings me to my next question, which is, what are the common things that people are coming to yourself as a sexual counselor with? What are the common problems that people are facing, and what are some of the common solutions that you can recommend?
Okay, so part of the issue are things that, again, are related to some of the things that we discussed. Could be somebody who has pornographic issues with the internet. There are people like that who want to try to get that out of their lives and realize that it's affecting their encounters, their sexuality, their relationship with their wives. There are other couples who will come because one or both are not really enjoying the concept of sexuality. Could be that there's actually pain involved, and that can be something which definitely needs to be taken care of. Okay, just a couple of weeks ago, there was a person who came to me, and he had issues with masturbation. And that's something which is interesting, because if you go to a regular sexual counselor, then for the most part, there's no issue here, because masturbation is part of the norm in most societies. And it's interesting, in the Jewish society, it isn't the norm. And the people want help with the masturbation issue. So,
norm or not norm, it is barred by Jewish law, by halacha.
Correct. It is barred by halacha, which is what makes it so difficult to get sexual counseling for, because it's hard to treat something which is completely normal. And that's why in this particular field, the halachic counseling in sexuality is so important, because if you go to somebody who understands the halachic ramifications in the context of being Jewish and how difficult it is to cope with, on the one hand, your sexual needs and desires as you see them, and the other hand, the demands that the halacha has of you, then you have to be able to somehow come to a solution and try to solve those two issues.
I think it's important for our Jewish listeners who don't know the depths of the Jewish law legal system, and for those non-Jewish who oftentimes do not know at all some of the ideas that are behind Jewish law, that the Jewish sexuality is highly regulated, certainly in even the times that you're allowed to have intimacy between husband and wife, very much based on the menstrual cycle. So that you will have on the average about 2 weeks out of a month that a woman and a man cannot be together in general, which is always a shock to so many people who have never heard that before. On the other hand, the wisdom within that is the freshness with which it keeps marriages and sexuality. And I always kind of laugh at some of my friends who don't understand the beauty of Jewish law. Sometimes they're Christian friends who are still kind of given to some of those ideas that say that the Jewish problem is too much legalism. Some are friends that have been, I don't know, either, you know, not turned on by orthodoxy. And to me, it's always kind of humorous because this legal system is one of the brilliant ways in which sexuality and marriages stay fresh. Right. That's very important, freshness.
I think it's, first of all, it's true in twofold. On the one hand, you have the two-week period where it's a time off, where you're not together at all physically. And there, you can work on a certain aspects of intimacy within the relationship. So that brings us back to that concept where, okay, we're not being physical, but there are other aspects of the relationship that need to be worked on. And this is the perfect time to do it. It's so easy when you get into an argument, you want to make up to hug and kiss and show how you're with your spouse. But what happens when you can't hug and kiss? That actually forces you to talk about the emotions, to talk about what's going on. And that creates a new level of intimacy. So those 2 weeks that you can't be physical with one another are great for working on intimacy. And then you get to those 2 weeks where you can be together and there is freshness. And one of the important things in any relationship, in any physically intimate relationship, is to make sure that there is some sort of aspect of freshness. And it's true, Judaism does regulate certain aspects of sexuality, but I think that there is a big plus to that as well. One of the things that are difficult in life is tension. Tension comes from not knowing. When two people go out on a date in the secular world, then at the end of the date, the boy has to figure out, am I supposed to kiss my girlfriend now? Do I have to kiss my girlfriend? What will she think if I do or if I don't? Do we hold hands? Do we not hold hands? How far do we go? And there's all this stress that comes with anything that has to do with that physical aspect. And in halachic Judaism, that's non-existent. There is no stress in that area because it is regulated. The same is true with the couple. On the one hand, there's a certain amount of regulation involved in the sexual intimacy. On the other hand, there is enough gray area within this regulation to give each couple the feeling that they are doing what is proper for them and what is enjoyable for them and what is within the halachic guidelines that Judaism has.
Folks, we're talking about Jewish sexuality here in the Yishai Fleischer Show with Rabbi Gedalia Petersile, who's a marriage counselor and sexuality counselor. And I want to throw out an idea to you. If you have sexual issues that you want to discuss and see it from a Jewish law, the brilliance of Jewish law and our 3,500 years of tradition in this field, write me an email, yishai@voiceofisrael.com. I promise not to share your name or to, God forbid, share your email with anybody, but I will read out the question, so write it in a form to be able to read out on the show, and I will have Rabbi Gedalia back on the show to talk about Jewish sexuality and the issues that either you or a friend or I don't know who has that you want to see hammered out in terms of Jewish law, because there's a lot here, and we're just touching the surface.
Yishai, I want you to know that one of the things that I see a lot is that there's a certain recurring theme that creates problems, and that theme is apologetics. Somebody may not feel completely secure with the way their body looks, be the male or female. And one of the things that they'll do is sort of apologize to their spouse for it and say, oh, but I'm a little fat over here and this side isn't so good. So, you know, when I unclothe, just don't look over there and don't do this. And what that actually does is usually the reverse. What it does is it focuses attention on exactly that spot to your spouse. So I would like to maybe leave with some sort of piece of advice, and that is, don't apologize. You are who you are. Love yourself for who you are. And when you can do that, your spouse will love you too.
We're talking with Rabbi Gedalia Petersile about Jewish sexuality. These are issues that we all have, folks. We are all human beings, and the Jewish wisdom has got something for you, Jew or Gentile. We can make our sexuality better, and that sexuality is also something that reflects our relationship with God. It's a union. It's a unity of things, and some of the greatest ideas and some of the greatest energies and thoughts can come from this beautiful union. Of course, life itself comes from this beautiful union, so don't be embarrassed. Don't be apologetic. Love life. life and love yourself and love the union that could come out of the beautiful marriage and energy of Jewish sexuality. I want to thank you, Rabbi Gedalia, for being with us.
Thank you very much.
All right, folks, more great stuff is on the way. Stay tuned. And of course, don't forget to write me an email, yishai@voiceofisrael.com, and shalom.
Voice of Israel, your source for news and views on everything Israel and the Middle East.